Have you heard?
KBOO hosts beloved Community in Action movie nights every third Thursday at 7 p.m. right here at the radio station. On March 15th, we'll show the film Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars, a documentary film about the band composed entirely of refugees displaced to Guinea during the Civil War in Sierra Leone. Again, that's a screening of Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars in for the KBOO Beloved Community in Action movie night on Thursday, March 15th at 7 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Short Docs, Sunday, March 18th at 7 p.m. at the Mission Theater in Portland. PDX Short Docs is a two-hour screening of Portland-related short documentaries produced by local independent filmmakers, including Mackenzie Blake, Outside the Frame, Sicka Stanton, Donovan Smith, and more. The screening will be followed by an audience Q&A session. Again, that's the PDX Short Docs, Sunday, March 16th at 7 p.m. at the Mission Theater, 1624 Northwest Gleason Street in Portland. Minors allowed with parent or guardian. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Enough National School Walkout on Wednesday, March 14th, 10 a.m. at Roseway Heights School in Portland. Enough is calling for students, teachers, school administrators, parents, and allies to take part in the National School Walkout for 17 minutes to protest Congress's inaction in response to gun violence. Again, that's Enough National School Walkout on Wednesday, March 14th, 10 a.m. at Roseway Heights School, 7334 Northeast Siskiyou Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Varsity Cheerleader Werewolves Live from Outer Space, the musical, showing March 16th through March 31st on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays at the Chapel Theater in Milwaukee, Oregon. Varsity Cheerleader Werewolves Live from Outer Space is an original comedy musical featuring cheerleaders, rebellious youth, evil aliens, puppets, and fueled by the songs of the 80s. Again, that's Varsity Cheerleader Werewolves Live from Outer Space, the musical, showing March 16th through March 31st on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays at the Chapel Theater, 4107 Southeast Harrison Street in Milwaukee, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6:02 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. The only program of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel. I'm a public school teacher and host every second Monday of the month, where I typically interview teachers and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. Joining us today on the phone is Nicole McCormick. Nicole, can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
I am so excited to have you. So folks, Nicole is a teacher from West Virginia, and we've been hearing a little bit about some stuff that's been going on in West Virginia.
It's been a very exciting time.
I'll bet. Well, Nicole, let's start out. I always like to hear a little bit about our guest's background, so tell us a little bit about your teaching background.
Well, I've been teaching for almost a decade. I'm a music teacher,
mm-hmm.
and I teach choral and instrumental to kids in pre-K through fifth grade, and I travel between two different schools in Southern West Virginia.
Southern West Virginia, what's that like there?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's what's kind of known in the outside world, I guess, as the coal fields. It would be the probably most impoverished part of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
We're right on the Virginia border. We're about maybe an hour and 15 minutes from Virginia Tech.
Okay.
So you can go just a little bit one way and have a totally different community to be in.
Gotcha. Okay. And a lot of poverty there in that area?
There are pockets, very small pockets of wealthy families, mm-hmm. and that's typically because they're doctors, lawyers, that they've chose professions like that. But most of the children that we serve come from homes that have very low incomes. And actually in West Virginia, we have a wonderful thing that we do for our students is that all children get a free breakfast and a free lunch every day.
Gotcha.
It doesn't matter their income, and so that's wonderful. And we do a lot of send-home meals, and we try to gear those toward children that can prepare them themselves. Like, they don't have to have adults in the home necessarily to be able to prepare these meals on the weekend.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to become a teacher.
Honestly, I kind of didn't know what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in high school, the thing that made me happiest was singing, and I felt like that was something that I excelled at. And when I went to college, I just wasn't for sure what I wanted to do, but I wanted to do something with music. And I went to Concord University, which is actually in the same town that I live in now.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And I couldn't read music. And they were kind enough to give me like a probationary period to learn how to read. And I worked really hard, and I did. And that just kind of turned into, wow, I would like to do this every day and actually be able to live. And so I decided to go towards education, and I haven't regretted it.
Nice. Wow. So you went from entering college not knowing how to read music to teaching music to kids.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. What is it that you enjoy most about teaching when you think about some of your highlights or just in general? What really gets you feeling excited about teaching?
I love the creativity.
Mm-hmm.
As a music teacher, I'm not necessarily beholden to a very strict structure. I have content standards which kind of guide my instruction that mm-hmm. during the course of the year my students need to learn this.
Yeah.
But I can choose to teach them that however I want. So, for example, I'm the only teacher in my county. We have about 60,000 people that live in our county, in Mercer County.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the only teacher that teaches second graders how to play chimes.
Gotcha.
And they're like their little handheld metal chimes.
Yeah.
And how I stumbled upon that was because I taught middle school previously, and I really enjoyed teaching them chimes. And I was like, you know what? I'm sure that I can figure out a way to teach the little kids too. And so I can cover that content by using, you know, something different. And I'm hoping that more teachers will pick that up, because I've picked up lessons obviously from other teachers in my county as well. So I love the creativity. I'm doing a dinosaur show with my first graders at one of the schools I'm at. So, you know, they sing and dance, and it's I love that part of it, the creativity.
Tell us a little bit about what's it like to teach in West Virginia. We don't necessarily know what it's like to do that here in Oregon. Kind of curious, how would you describe things? What sort of hardships are there? Maybe not unique to West Virginia, but what are you dealing with when you're teaching there?
Well, in general, I think the biggest factor for us is poverty and the opioid crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that started probably 5, 6, 7 years ago. So now those children are in kindergarten and first and second grade. And
yeah.
You know, so it has become more difficult over time. We were dealing with more behavioral and emotional issues and educational needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the flip side of that, because it is such a small, close-knit community, we have a lot of support from other organizations.
Okay.
So we have a lot of support from churches and recreational centers and things like that to make sure that those students have meals, that their parents can keep the heat on, whatever it is, that they have an opportunity to get clothes for next to nothing. We have a community service program in one of the schools, and it's just teacher and service personnel funded, and we buy socks and shoes for children in need. And so, I mean, there's that part of it, that sense of that we're all in this together and we're all responsible for each other,
yeah,
is wonderful.
Yes.
But dealing with sometimes, you know, things that 5 and 6 year olds should never have to go through,
right,
trying to figure out how to still educate them and meet that need, it is very difficult and very draining.
Absolutely. Well, let's flash forward a bit now to talk about what I think folks are really interested in hearing about, which is your statewide strike. Tell us, how and when did you first hear about the idea of a statewide strike? Was it quite a long time ago when you started hearing people talking about it, or did it seem like it happened pretty fast to you? Tell us a little bit about the beginnings.
Well, I honestly think that this all started probably about 3 years ago.
Mm.
And why that started was because that our pay, our steps that go up by year, don't keep up with inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And between that and our healthcare costs, and if you saw anything in the news where it said PEIA,
mm-hmm,
that's Public Employees Insurance Agency. So as a public employee, you don't have another choice unless that your spouse is employed with some other field or position,
right,
and they have a different choice. So over the past 3 years, we've all taken a pay cut,
mm-hmm,
because that our pay hasn't covered the rising healthcare costs and,
right,
and inflation. So I really started hearing kind of sporadic rumblings about 3 years ago. And then, you know, it was a select few people that kind of, were really involved and angry and wanted to try to do something. But overall, it felt like that most of the people that I worked with and most of the people around the state were kind of trying to pretend like it wasn't going on.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to ignore that there were things, that things were getting worse. And so you had the same 10 or 15 people running these county organizations. We have 55 counties in West Virginia, which is where you hear the 55
yes,
strong.
Yes, we know that.
And yeah, and the individual counties have their own individual school boards and superintendents. And I know it can be different for, you know, for other states, but that's how it works here.
Mm-hmm.
And
same in Oregon.
So yeah. So it would be the same 10 or 15 people in each county doing the work for the hundreds of people that belong to that organization.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever that PEIA rolled out their proposed increases, probably back in early October, you know, the crap hit the fan. Like, I think people kind of went, whoa, like, well, we can't ignore this. And so for my family, my husband is also a teacher, and we have 3 biological children and a baby that we adopted through the West Virginia foster care system.
Mm-hmm.
And so our monthly premium, like our out-of-pocket expenses, was going to rise between $200 and $300 a month. And we're already very underpaid. We already struggle to meet our bills and our child care costs. And that was, like, for me personally, that was kind of like the nail in the coffin. And so I went to these hearings that they had. West Virginia isn't huge, but if you're talking about driving, since it's so mountainous,
mm-hmm,
from the southernmost point to the northernmost point, it takes about 6 hours to get across the state.
Yeah.
And they had these hearings, but they only had them maybe in three places over the entire state. So people were driving hours to get to these, and these happened in November. So I went to one about an hour from my home, and I mean, the stories were just, they were heart-wrenching. Like, they, you know, these people were talking about how that they were retired and they'd had the same income since 1997, and that they were already going to food banks and they didn't know what they were going to do. I mean, these are retired teachers. And of course, you know, state road workers and DHHR workers and Department of Health and Human Resources. I mean, these are people that keep our state going, that, that take care of our people. And so, you know, people were just pouring their guts out. I did too. And this board of all middle-aged white men in nice-looking suits,
really?
There was about five or six of them, and they're appointed by the governor. And the main guy, his name is Ted Cheatham, and he makes like $145,000 a year, which is unheard of. I mean, a starting cook makes $19,000 a year in southern West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, huge gap there. So they just sat there and kind of looked at us and, you know, listened to us talk to him for a couple hours, and then they left, and nothing changed. So it felt like a big sham. So I think that's when the people realized, all these years of talking to our legislators and emailing them and going into their offices and having them, you know, put on this show for us isn't going to do anything. We're going to have to disrupt things, to shut things down, to actually get them to listen to us. So that was in December that they finalized the plan, that they said, okay, well, starting in July, all of these things are going to come into effect. And there was even this program called Go 365, and it would track, you know, how many steps you took in a day, and you could put in how much physical activity you had and your measurements and this and that, and you could earn gift cards.
Oh my.
And yeah, and you could, if you met a certain amount of points, then they wouldn't penalize you with an extra $500 a year and some kind of, you know, deductible or something. So instead of it being like a way to say, hey, you know, be a little bit more active and we'll do something for you, it was punitive. So between all of that, the individual counties started having more meetings with their organizations, and they decided they were going to start having town halls where that they invited elected officials to come and they could express their concerns to them. So we roll around to January, and all of this is taking place. You know, people are, they're openly saying strike. They are, you know, airing their grievances freely, and they're having these people come to their town halls. And, you know, they're talking to state leadership with the unions, and it seems like that still nothing is moving, like that it isn't enough. So we come into February, and we all decide separately and with the wonder of Facebook and a secret group called Public Employees United, who went from maybe like 20 members in September to it has like 27,000 now.
Yes.
That was by a good friend of mine, Jay. He, I don't know if our movement could have happened without him. So, a huge shout out to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people started just being more open about it. And I think that everyone realized that if we do this together, there is literally nothing that they can do to us. There's already 727 vacancies in the state that are not being filled by fully certified teachers. So who is going to replace us?
Right.
And, you know, they even have trouble at local levels, especially in southern West Virginia, finding substitutes because they can't pass the drug test.
Mm.
So, oh, yes. You know, we're in a bad way. And I mean, if more than a handful of people miss on any given day, you know, you're talking about that schools already can't function properly.
Right.
So, but I have to tell you that I think that our saviors in keeping the shut state down were the service personnel.
Mm, okay.
I really think that they were even more important than the teachers, because the bus drivers and the cooks were like, you know, the wheels aren't moving and the food isn't going to get made.
Oh,
sorry.
Interesting. Yes.
Yeah. And so even if there would have been some teachers that would have been willing to go in, between them and the communication between us and our local superintendents, I really think that that was how that we were able to shut down school, you know, statewide for that many days.
Mm-hmm.
And us to be able to make up those days so that nobody really missed pay except for substitutes.
Nicole, let me just pause and just say to our audience, if you're just joining us late, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. And we only have you for another 10 minutes, and I have so many questions.
Oh, my gosh.
let's go through some kind of quickly. I wish I had you for an hour. So anything you want to talk about, maybe a highlight for you in terms of how you were personally involved or what you did during the strike?
Well, I've always been heavily involved, but I had to take time off whenever that we adopted our youngest child, because she's only 5 months younger than our last biological child.
Yes.
So it's kind of like having twins. But so I really stepped back in this year. I was co-president for years,
okay.
And I stepped back in to take a vice president role, and I helped organize getting food to children.
Okay.
And I was on the picket line. I even got sunburnt one day. I mean, it was like
an added benefit of the strike.
One day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... So I was in the picket line, on the picket line locally, and I went to Charleston, which is about an hour and 45-minute drive from us, where Capitol is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really tried to be as out there and as positive. And I run our Facebook page. We have a Mercer County Education Association page, and I made sure to post thank yous to all of the PTO groups and the churches and the local businesses that brought us food and water and ponchos and umbrellas. And, you know, so I really tried to do as much of my part as I could.
Was it exhausting?
It was, but I have to tell you, there are very few things in my life that I can remember as being as excited about as whenever that we decided to go Wildcat.
Yes.
And seeing that map light up red, that all those counties were starting to shut down. I mean, I don't know. There's very few things that I can remember being that excited about. And, you know, we were down to like, it was like 30, and then it was 50, and then it was like 54, and then at like 10 o'clock that night, the very last county, and I think it was somewhere up north, but, you know, it went out, and it was just so, like, exhilarating, like, yes, we're going to keep this shut down. They can't just do what they've always done.
Yes. Well, that's good to hear. I know I often, when I talk about strike, I hear the response I hear back is, oh, I sure hope we don't go to a strike. I think a lot of people are afraid of it, so it's good to hear that. It sounds like it was a pretty positive and inspiring experience for you.
It was. I mean, and the community was so supportive, which I was afraid of, because whenever that you are back to the wall, struggling to survive poor, if someone looks like they're making a little bit money, more money than you, I feel like that the tendency is to be resentful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and even me personally, whenever I see other people that can do much more for their kids than I can do, I feel resentful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, God, you know, but even with that, and even with so many of our parents, you know, working two and three jobs, which, I mean, I work an extra job too. My husband does too.
Yes.
But even with them struggling more than we do, they were still supportive. There was very little negative feedback, like, to our faces. I know that sometimes social media brings out, you know, the ugliness in some people.
Sure.
But of all those hours and hours and hours of being out there with the public, I mean, the thousands of good comments that I personally saw, I may have seen three negative.
Wow.
I mean, okay. it was so slim compared to what I thought it could have been.
Yes. How do you feel about the settlement?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you got the pay raise, but for the insurance, you just have a a task force.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And I worry about the people that they've chosen for that task force. Mm-hmm. You know, I, only one teacher out of like the 26 or 29 people. And they even had to go back and add more women because they were so, we were so underrepresented.
Yes.
I'm trying to be hopeful about it, that, that there will be good progress towards something. But I mean, I tell you, if I'm being honest, between that, between not having something, you know, definite in place, and the fact that, you know, we only got a 5% raise, I mean, that equals to about $2,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I wouldn't want to take it off the back of anybody, but if they're going to come in and take our gas, which I'm personally against, but if it's going to happen, then we need to have a tax come off of it
mm-hmm.
in order to be able to support our citizens and our public education system. And I mean, I don't think that any public servant in West Virginia deserves anything less than a $20,000 across the board raise.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of time and dedication, I mean, DHHR workers are so overworked and underpaid, and they're sleeping in their offices with children because they can't find homes for them because of the opioid epidemic.
Right.
I mean, that they deserve so much more than the money they get, or the people that are feeding our children or keeping the schools clean. It's just, it blows my mind that we don't treat them with the respect and salary that they deserve.
Absolutely. What's it been like to return to work? It must have been tough to go back on that first day.
It was tough to go back, but you know, honestly, I think that's the happiest I've seen so many of my coworkers in forever. I mean, because I think that even though that we all felt like that 5% was a huge compromise and that, you know, we're still wary of what might happen with PEIA, the thought that we came together and we did something, and I'm hoping that that boldness will continue through to elections. You know, I ran for our county president, and I ran unopposed, so, so I assume I'm going to be our president of our education association. And my hope is that I can harness this, that I can find some kind of little job, you know, for as many people to do as I can to keep them involved and feel like they have ownership in our organization.
Right.
You know, because before, I felt like that I was, I don't know, not capable of doing more. You know, that I just kind of had to take my supporting role.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like that I have more power.
Oh.
I feel like that me personally, one person can make a difference.
Wow. You're empowered. What lessons do you think teachers in other states could learn from this experience?
That if they stick together, that there's nothing that can be done. I mean, that legislators are going to lie to you over and over again like they always do. And that if you can find that strength in each other, and that you can trust one another to stand firm in what you want, you know, that there's nothing that can be done.
Yes.
And that you can get some of what you want. You know, it's probably not going to be everything, but it's going to be better than what you have now.
Right.
Because obviously just writing emails and phone calls and taking visits doesn't do anything. I mean, you have to disrupt in order to be able to get what you want.
Can I quote you on that?
Yes. Yes. I mean, you have to disrupt the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And our labor is ours. It is ours. It is ours to give and ours to withhold.
Right on, sister.
Right. I mean, and you have to recognize your power in that. You know, you weren't born to slave away and follow rules and go on about your business. My hope is that we can make a positive impact, that we can leave the world better than we found it.
Fantastic. Wow, Nicole, it's been so great to have you on the show. I'm It's been really interesting to hear some of the things that you've shared with us, some of the things that I didn't know. What was it like for the kids coming back?
You know, and I know I teach younger children. I have pre-K through five, but it was just like it'd been a few snow days. They were A-okay. I didn't really even get any questions about anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got a couple of, I missed yous.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they were just fine.
Yes.
And they're going to be fine. Like, if anything, I hope that they can see that they have value and that
yes.
they can do what we can do. You know, that they can choose how best to get what they need. It's not a want, it's a need.
Yes.
And so, you know, I'm hoping that they realize it's okay. It's okay to stand up. It's okay to say something's not right. You don't have to just pretend like it's okay.
Thank you, Nicole. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been so great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, I want to thank our engineers, Danielle and Mike, to get this show rolling today. Thank you to the audience for tuning in. This is Stephen Siegel. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Enough National School Walkout on Wednesday, March 14th, 10 a.m. at Roseway Heights School in Portland. Enough is calling for students, teachers, school administrators, parents, and allies to take part in the National School Walkout.